Blog Talk Radio.
I'm bypassing the music tonight because I already have a host on the line. I'm going to do my introduction, and then I'm pulling in Albert, and Don should be calling in soon. So one thing I noticed about the Supreme Court nomination for Amy Coney Barrett is that the last two selections have been Catholics, and six of the nine seated Supreme Court people, seated Supreme Court judges, are Catholic. Now, Ruth Bader Ginsburg just died. She was Jewish. So there's three Jews on the court before she died and six Catholics. Brett Kavanaugh's Catholic. So is Amy Coney Barrett, if elected or chosen. A lot of the Christian right do hate Catholics. My experience, meaning myself, has taught me that Catholics are familiar with sin, repentance, and humility. Catholics understand the human condition even in lieu of the institutional crisis of the church regarding molestation of young boys, which is why the unforgiving extreme right Christian movement may find it hard to accept a candidate like Amy Coney Barrett. However, the Catholic Church does have setbacks, like not changing with the times. I attend a Lutheran church in Duluth, which is gay-friendly. We accept gays into our congregation. The Catholic Church does not waver on birth control, abortion, LGBTQ rights, and traditional marriage. Only time will tell if ACB will be chosen and if she is. And right now, in the current hearing, she is having a hard time answering the tougher questions on moral issues, changing society, minority sentencing, institutional racism, women's rights, labor rights, equal pay for equal work between the sexes. Now, I'm going to read a segment briefly from a Catholic magazine. And I'm going to talk about, it's about two paragraphs. Following the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg on September 18th, President Trump promised to swiftly nominate a replacement for the ninth seat on the court. By Monday, two names surfaced, which were Amy Coney Barrett and Barbara Lagoa, both women who were confirmed to the U.S. Court of Appeals under Trump are practicing Catholics and have spoken publicly about the role of their faith and how it plays out in their judicial careers. Before the death of Ginsburg at 87, the Supreme Court included five Catholic justices. That was Chief Justice John Roberts, Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Sonia Sotomayor, and Brett Kavanaugh, and three Jewish justices: Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, and Elena Kagan. The ninth justice, Neil Gorsuch, was raised Catholic but attends an Episcopal church. If either Barrett or Lagoa were nominated and confirmed, six out of the nine Catholic justices will be Catholic. That's two-thirds. Catholic justices are frequently nominated by Republican presidents, including Trump, George H.W. Bush, his dad. The court succession was Sotomayor, who was appointed in 2009 by Obama. Two-thirds of the current Supreme Court are and were raised Catholic, so Catholics only make up 20% of the U.S. population. 31% of Catholics are represented on Capitol Hill, even though it's 20% overall nationwide. Since the establishment of the 1789 Supreme Court, it's gone from a reserve of white male Protestants to the contemporary bench diversified by race, creed, and gender, beginning with the breakthrough appointments of the black justice Thurgood Marshall and Sandra Day O'Connor. Supreme Court justices are nominated and must be approved by the Senate and usually serve till death. And I'm only going to read one more paragraph. There is a long tradition of U.S. Catholics entering the legal profession, most obviously in law enforcement, but in other areas as well. Now, what they're talking about it on the East Coast, there's a lot of Italians who join the law enforcement, like in New York and Jersey. So Richard Dolflinger from the Notre Dame Center of Ethics and Culture said other devout Christians who are Protestants don't have a tendency to go into law. Dolflinger says that evangelical Protestants may be more reluctant to pursue legal careers because they often see a sharper divide between the city of God and the city of man. That's an Augustine reference. Whereas Catholicism provides a natural bridge between the founding principles of our nation and basic principles of Catholic teaching. Also, Catholics who have struggled with religious prejudice in the U.S. may have seen the legal profession as a way to ensure their rights were protected. Historically, Catholics have chosen law with greater frequency than other religious groups. In 1955, Catholic scholar John Tracy Ellis said in his essay, American Catholics and the Intellectual Life, sharply criticized the American Catholic culture for steering its young people toward practical careers like law or medicine versus humanities and the art. What is gratifying to learn is that so many of the graduates of Catholic institutions pursue their studies beyond college by fitting themselves for legal and medical professions. So I'm going to stop there. I also wanted to say that the Catholic Church is also more nurturing of radicals. Like during the 60s, I interviewed 14 men who burned draft cards, and 5 were Catholic priests. And they were willing, and there were priests who they forwarded social justice issues like helping the poor, ending war, solidifying like the wage gap between rich and poor, helping those in need in the inner city, trying to abolish penalty of crimes. And I've had interfacing directly with Catholics who have tried to. One of my friends, Bob Graff, he had $1 million. He advocated that $1 million that the Catholic Church got from closing 3 of its churches in Milwaukee be utilized on the poor, and that money was distributed to the poor through washers, dryers, new stoves, and housing help. With that, I'm going to bring in Albert. Hi, Albert. How's your night going?
Not much. Just chilling. You know, relaxing.
Okay, so the reason I brought up the Catholic thing tonight is because I think, you know, like a lot of right-wing Christians that are supporting Donald Trump, they don't like the Catholics. They don't like the institutionalization of the Catholic Church. They don't like how it's more of a hierarchy of authority and control from the Pope down through the bishops. And even though the Catholics are anti-abortion, pro-marriage, and anti-LGBTQ for the most part, the current Pope is rather liberal, and he's accepting of all kinds of people. And one time he he bathed the feet of a Muslim right in a Roman square in Rome. So, like, I don't see how the correlation is made where the radical Protestant are combining with the Catholic for a political agenda. How do you feel about that, being that your mother might have been raised Catholic? I'm not sure if she was.
She went to her local church. There was always a confusion between the Catholic and the Christian, right? I mean, you know, they all the churches claim to be like, oh, well, you know, we're just, you know, with God personally, you know, no differences. It didn't really matter to my mom as long as it was, you know, a church for God, and that's where she used to go back then. And there was that was when we used to live in Los Angeles. Los Angeles did. We had a cathedral, you know, and we and they like
what
downtown.
Do you remember the
LA.
Name of the cathedral? Because there's a famous one in downtown LA.
You know, it was a long time ago when I was a little kid, so I kind of don't, like, right off the bat right now, like, I don't. If I ask my mom and I Google research, maybe I can find out later, but not right now.
Okay, that's cool. So I know that you're not very religious, so maybe from a secular point of view, a non-religious point of view, can you explain to me how significant you think a Supreme Court nomination is before the November 3rd election? Do you think it's significant or not?
You know, the Supreme Court, I mean, they always had a lot of power. A lot of power to change laws and stuff like that, you know. And I know that what's her name? She just died.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I literally have to go back and forth with you for a couple of minutes, try to get the name correct.
Oh, that's okay. Just say what you got to say.
Well, anyways, I know that the mainstream media does push a lot. That she made women's rights possible. Now, of course, I mean, she was one of the Supreme judges, and, you know, I mean, she voted on the behalf. And, you know, but that's all she did. It's not like she went out there and started marching with the women. You know, it's not like she did other stuff. You know, I mean, she said a lot of nice things about it, but she didn't do a lot of nice things. All she did is that one vote. And that's all that you can say about the people in the Supreme Court, you know, the very powerful people in the Supreme Court, my dad. I mean, they, you know, you don't see them going out there marching, for Black Lives Matter or for any kind of, you know, movement to help people out. You know, I mean, they're just. And if they do, they wouldn't be serving in the Supreme Court anymore. Supreme Court, they seem to do a lot of things they do a lot of things good, but they also do a lot of things bad. And most of the things that they decide are what the people don't want. They're what the
right. It doesn't always go by social desire or will. And
most of the time it doesn't go what people want. It goes what the government wants, you know.
But did you know in the last 5 years or so, they did uphold gay rights, the right for every person in every state in America to get married. And John Roberts upheld, and his court upheld Obamacare twice. And even though it's a conservative court, so to speak, 5-4, they still upheld some liberal ideologies.
That doesn't affect any. Well, as long as it doesn't affect the military budget and any
people strategy
holds they have overseas. Yeah. But, you know, I mean,
what
as
I'm
long
trying
as, like
to say is that it doesn't. It's not always predictable. Just because there might be five conservatives and four liberals, it may not be predictable. Pardon?
Yeah, those little things are going to be. It can be changed. It won't affect the 1%. Even if gays are able to marry or not, it's very non. Really very little can affect them. You know, of that and that situation.
So you're talking about the class structure and the rich getting richer. You're talking about
the
major
the
thread
elite.
Line
about, like the
or texture
elite,
of the
like,
culture
you,
is not going to be impacted.
No. I mean, when gay marriage would make, like, even for me, it made no impact for me. Like, I just, like, I live about my day normal, whether or not there's gay marriage or not. It doesn't affect me at all, you know. And I think for the
no,
most part,
I disagree
I
with you, and
effect.
I'll explain why. It doesn't if my gay neighbors 3 blocks from here get married, it doesn't affect me directly. But society as a whole, if Amy Coney Barrett gets nominated and they have a vote to outlaw abortion forever, like any kind of abortion, long term, short term, 3 months, and no woman is allowed to have an abortion, that means every man or every woman who engages in casual sex and gets pregnant will not be able to terminate the pregnancy. Now, maybe not with gay marriage is it directly effective, but you have to understand that gay people, they have what right-wing people call an agenda, where they're infiltrating their values into society, culture, movies, television, and film. So the more ammunition the gay community has to further their cause, they will do it if they feel like they have the right people behind them.
Yeah. Well, on a surveillance standpoint, for surveillance, if gay people do get married, it's more easier to, you know, see who's with who, and, you know, and it does benefit our surveillance country in a way.
Why are you saying because they can't procreate, or why are you saying that?
No, I mean, when they get married, if they don't get married, you know what I mean, let's just say if the FBI or whatever is following certain person, so said person, you know, they're just like, okay, well, they don't know that person's with the other person. And let's just see, oh, well, they're married, so they're together, and it's easier to spot who's connected with who, yeah?
I think that the only real impact I see, can you hang on a second?
Hey.
Don, call in.
I don't think I can.
Okay, anyways, I'm sorry, I was trying to get a hold of another co-host. This is how I see it. If a gay person wants to get married, fine. But nowadays, they would like rights to raise children, and that's part of the structure of the law and things of that nature. So certain Christians think that promoting a gay lifestyle is sabotaging the fabric of our Christian culture. So they see it as non-moral turpitude. They don't see it as moral.
Yeah, I always been open-minded, like not atheist, but also not religious. So for me, one way or the other, you know, as long as a person's happy, so said person is happy, then that all that really matters.
Well, that's the non-religious point of view, that you weren't really raised in a strict religious upbringing where you're taught that being homosexual is wrong.
Yeah, I guess they did, you know, the religions did push that in a sense. But, yeah, I want to see what the other guys think.
Well, Don is not calling in now because his wife's pissed off at her show. John is at work, and Ben did not call in. So we're probably only going to make this a 30 to 45-minute show tonight. So I'm opening the topic up to another conversation if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, well, what you think about the Google's connections, like when they hire, you know, the person, the lady at DARPA to work as one of their chairs, high positions, and also they hired a lot of, during a couple of projects they had, they hired a lot of CIA and DEA and a lot of people from the military, of course. But yeah, I mean, Google is really connected in the government, not just like having, they also have special meetings with the CIA and whatnot. They have meetings, but not closed-door meetings where you really can't hear what they're saying. But, you know, I mean, how do you feel them employing a bunch of CIA, DIA, NSA
employees? To understand that for me, in my perspective, I think Google is the epicenter of the Internet. Everything I network through is through Google, except for Facebook separate, but Google owns they're collaborative with YouTube. They own all my photos, every picture I take, even the ones I erase, Google owns. Everything I do, every thought I convey to somebody on email, it's all done through Google. Both of my screenplay and my novel are in Google. And everything I do is in Google. So if the government wants to know what I'm doing, they know. They have every communication that I engage in through Google. So I think what you're saying about other people being hired is Google is a perfect way to track people who are non-patriotic infiltrators or are trying to sabotage the government. And by the way, I see your call dropped, and I just thought you back in.
Oh, no. I guess it dropped somehow. I don't know how.
Yeah, so what I was saying is that Google tracks all my movements.
Yeah, they do. They do. And they hire a lot of, and they have a lot of connections. Even with the Google Earth, literally the government was the major runner who did all the mapping and everything for Google Earth. I mean, it was like literally, I mean, it's almost like they're in bed with them. I mean, their whole entire infrastructure, it's like literally government based. And every time you ask them, well, are they connected with the government? They say no. You know, they deny it. But everything they do is the other way around. Google.
What kind of apps do you use on a regular basis?
Well, I think Twitter. I used to Twitter, but I think Google bought out Twitter, if I remember correctly. Or no, was it? I can't remember which other company. I know Google bought a couple of companies that we use now. But I know.
Well, they own. Facebook is collaborative with all these organizations too. YouTube and Google are linked. And did you know that Google and YouTube are linked?
Yeah. Google owns YouTube. I mean, they're the same company. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah.
So why don't you talk a little while I'm looking it up?
The Central Intelligence Agencies, they not only work with Google, they work with all the tech giants like Facebook, Microsoft, even IBM, Nickel, and many other, even Apple. You know, they're like literally.
They own Spotify, DuckDuckGo, which is a. DuckDuckGo is a thing where you can establish your own individual website, like your own domain name. I'll bring it up in a second. It's taking me a minute.
I know TikTok used to. I mean, like they used to be owned by the Chinese, a Chinese company, but since they were not how you said releasing that information to the Central Intelligence Agency, which is for the USA, they were not getting that information. The information they wanted from that app, so they completely threw out the owner. I guess they still when they use TikTok over there in China, they still have, but over here in the U.S. completely threw it out and replaced it for something else instead. So TikTok is not what it was anymore. Now they're not able to tap into that information like they wanted to.
I have a couple. I have some information right here. Alphabet is the parent company of Google. It's one of the world's largest technology conglomerates with a market capitalization of $1 trillion as of July 2020. The majority of Alphabet's revenue is generated from advertising. The company offers performance advertising, which shows advertisers to connect with their users through measurable results. So there is a new movie on Netflix, by the way, called The Social. I think it's called The Social Dilemma. It shows how they individually promote ads and connections with people. Like, I'm on Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, and Twitter. So here's a couple of the businesses they've recently acquired. Nest It's for small home products. The acquisition price was $3.2 billion. They acquired it in February 2014. DoubleClick is an ad management company. Acquisition price, $3.1 billion. Acquired 2008. Looker, it's a business intelligence software and data analytics. The acquisition price was $2.6 billion, and it was acquired in February of this year. YouTube was acquired in 2006. Its price was $1.65 billion, and the ad revenue is $15.1 billion as of 2019. I want to read one segment about this. YouTube was founded in 2005 by three former PayPal employees who believed ordinary people could enjoy sharing homemade videos. By the summer of 2006, YouTube was already offering more than 100 million videos per day. But technological problems accompanied with rapid growth and lack of commercial success prompted YouTube to begin searching for a buyer. Meanwhile, Google's own video platform, Google Video, was launched in 2005 and failed to generate much traffic, so they acquired YouTube in 2006 and gave it a powerful new platform. So that's about all I'm going to read about that. Now,
well,
as far as the government storing information, we have done a couple of shows about that. But another question about
Google
is that inclusiveness and transparency.
Well, you know what I say? Google hires military forces too. Those military forces are you know, security, but heavily, I repeat, heavily armed security at the Google data centers, which where they collect all the everybody's data, right? They collect all the data, and that place is literally armed. Security guards all over the place, right? I mean, like, literally, they have those state-of-the-art car ramming devices that come up and will, like, literally destroy a car that's trying to come through, you know, like if somebody was trying to ram their car inside, trying to get in there. They also, I wouldn't even go so far as to fetch if they have anti-missile launchers, right? I bet they do. I can guarantee you. But nobody really knows all the defensive systems they have at the data centers, rather than the ones they show us. You know, whatever they allow the corporate media to show in an interview or whatnot. But no civilian or whatever has. You know, or besides any other corporate media, walk down and show, you know, see on, show all, right? Right, never happened, right? So it's mostly secret. So, I mean, for all you know, they could also have a couple tanks around in each corner. I don't know. I mean, who knows what they have there? Maybe an underground tunnel with some more, you know, with the very intelligent data underneath, or maybe they even have, who knows, right? One can think of anything, but I'm pretty sure. Whatever I say, it's kind of irrelevant. It's in the possible and the norm that could be there.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I don't view it as a threat right now because I'm not a threat to national security. But some of my viewers are a threat to other people regarding promoting a more equitable society and a socialist.
Well, check this out. Well, this is the interesting fact. Even though you're not a threat, check this out. Facebook is actually trying to make a currency, a real money currency. Remember like Bitcoin? There used to be Bitcoin. Well, Facebook is going to make a digital money currency that you could buy stuff with their digital currency. But here's the thing, you know how a couple of people already are banned from using Facebook. So if Facebook doesn't like what you say on their app or on their website or whatever, like on their, you know, they can just kick you off, and then they kick you off from using Facebook. Then you can't buy anything if you're using Facebook money currency. And that's what that's kind of the thing they got going on over there in China. In China, they got the good behavior on the internet. If you behave good on the internet, you know, they allow you to buy certain things, you know, like cars and houses to move on. And if they're not, they don't allow you to buy certain things. They kind of like, you know, it's kind of like good credit and bad credit. They kind of lowered it down, and they kind of just basically, you know, take your money away or stop you from spending anything, you know. And that's kind of the new, what they're trying to push right here with the Facebook money currency.
So what do you think their ultimate objective is to control the way people spend money, or just to track everything we do in our lives?
Well, look at all these people protesting all over the United States, right? I mean, my brother even lives in Los Angeles. He'll tell you, I mean, in Los Angeles, it's crazy, right? You got thousands of people walking in the middle of the street of Los Angeles protesting, and you know.
Well,
I mean,
recently
right now,
they were protesting the pending war in Armenia, and they were also protesting after the Laker victory.
Right, and they're trying to stop the protest, and a lot of things they're using right now to try to stop the protest. It's kind of like minuscule, but like, I mean, right, if they use the Facebook money currency, they can really take people's money away for anybody trying to protest or whatever. You know, it would be a much better system. But here's what I noticed. I was watching a YouTube video, and this was very interesting, right? I was kind of like watching a reality show, and it was very interesting to me, right? And so I saw a 6-hour video, right? I was on YouTube. I was watching the YouTube. It was all like literally like, almost all peaceful, right? Very peaceful protests, right? For like 6 hours of video.
Where was it, in L.A.?
Yeah, in L.A. It was in L.A. But, I mean, not every – I mean, sometimes there's some riots in L.A. But for this video I was watching, right? This video I was watching, it was a nonstop video play for 6 hours, and it was all peaceful except for like 1 minute. There was this one guy, right? This one guy that, like, you know, threw a bottle at the police, right? At the police, and then all the protesters were like pointing that guy, like, there he is. That's the guy who threw it. There, you saw him, like, arrest him. That's the guy. They were pointing at him. And the cops didn't do anything to arrest that guy. And by the way, that guy came out of nowhere, right? And then he leaves and he just disappears. And then, you know, nobody knows who he is. Of course, he wasn't even there for long, anyways. Anyway, so yeah, so he threw a bottle at the cops. The cops didn't arrest him, and the guys are pointing at him. They're pointing at him. They're following him, and they're trying to get the cops to get him, but the cops are not going after them. And then half an hour later, you know, I guess when backup shows up, or maybe there's a curfew, I guess. I don't know. Anyways, the cops move in and start arresting people. Okay. And then here's what's really interesting.
Was this recently?
That's not the. No, that was, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. I saw that video, but it got deleted off of YouTube. But that's not the most interesting part. Most interesting part, later after, I saw this. I was watching a CNN news report on CNN, and I saw the same video on them. They had the same guy throw. So here's the news report. Here's what I saw, right? The news report had like 10 seconds, and it said, oh, yeah, protesters are throwing. They say protesters. They didn't say one guy. They said protesters are throwing bottles at the police. And they had like a 10-second video showing that guy throwing the bottle at the police. They didn't show any of the videos of all the protesters pointing at that guy to arrest him or any of that. It was a 10-second video of the guy throwing the bottle at them, and that's all they showed, CNN. And then they showed the interview with the cop with a police officer, and the police officer was like, yeah, the protesters were throwing bottles at us, so, you know, we made some arrest on, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, so it was kind of like, you know, they used the word protesters. They were throwing bottles at it. Like, they were, like, they, you know, it was only one person, but they say they, and they use terminology like that, right?
Which news station was covering the protest?
Well, CNN at that time. But anyways, and then they interview some, I guess, some right wingers, right? And they're like, yeah, some white guy ringers, they interview, I guess, on the CNN, and he's like, yeah, all these protesters, like, they're all rioters, they're all just, you know, throwing stuff and breaking stuff and, you know, rioting and destroying stuff and, you know, and throwing bottles at the police, right? And that's what he said on his interview when they interviewed him, right? They interviewed this guy with that same video. So you guys, so let me go back again. So anyways, in the video, for 10 seconds, they show that guy who threw the bottle, and then they show the interview of cops and the protesters throwing bottles, blah, 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 blah. And then they interview this guy. There's all these protesters are violent and rioting and blah, blah, blah. And then the other video that I told you that I saw for 6 hours showed nothing but a peaceful protest for 6 hours, except for that 1 minute in between for that one guy, and that was it. So basically, that one little thing and CNN blew it off the charts, and they use all their, you know like the like whoever they can get to make all the protesters look bad. And so now you got those big stereotypes, right? Those stereotypes of people like, oh yeah, all these protesters are all rioters. They're all like, all these protesters should be called rioters. You know, all these guys are violent. All these guys are, you know, these stereotypes, they name all these guys. Like, they all do it, right? I mean, usually when there's a bad, you know, an apple, I guess, bad person, it's like one out of 1,000 protesters, you know? And it's not like a system that can... it's not like the system, like in the police officers, where they have a system where they're allowed to do these bad things in a way. I mean, protesters, they're not allowed to do it. They're not allowed to throw bottles at the police officer. They're not allowed, you know what I mean? And they're not allowed to, you know, do violence anyways in the first place. So it's already illegal in a kind of sense to protest anyways. Oh, so, and you have a lot of governors trying to push for curfews on every city, on every state, you know, all these curfews and everything. And then they're also trying to push, make it illegal, just to protest without a license, right? If you're not there without a license. So now they're just trying to add more rules on top of that. So, yeah.
I get it. I've heard many examples of that on both sides, claiming that all the protesters are from other cities, that, and then other people saying that the Democrats are to blame, and that their people are just stirring things up to stir it up, and those types of problems. So I've heard it from both sides, and who really knows what the truth is? Unless you're actually at the protest.
Exactly.
Now,
I wrote
an article, though, on how Trump's federal government violated certain, people's rights in that Lafayette Square in Washington, D.C., the day that they tear gassed people just to get rid of them so Trump could walk across the street.
Yeah, and I can guarantee you 99% of people that say, like, all these protesters are violent criminals and blah, 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 and all the bad things they say about them, I can guarantee you, like, 99% of them that are saying that never even been to a protest. Like, I can guarantee you most of them never even been to a protest. And if they even been to a protest, they were just probably passing by. But they never stand there and just, you know, watched it for an hour and just, like, experienced it themselves. I can guarantee you that. That's, you know, obviously they don't like it, so why would they experience, why would they be there to experience it? They do not know.
They only had, like, one protest up here in Duluth. It lasted... There was one day and one the next, but it wasn't significant. But I guess I knew a couple of radical Republicans who had their guns out and were going to take action, but they never got near the protest. So
no, usually, they get their guns out however they want, but that's not who the FBI is following. the FBI, I mean, they're following right now the new Black Panthers. Oh, you know, they're following a bunch of black guys with guns because those are the guys they think are dangerous. Not the white guys with guns, the black guys with guns. That's kind of, you know, it's just really terrible. And they do also follow a lot of the Secret Service and MGI has been following a lot of the Black Lives Matter organizations, people. And they had a lot of jump outs. A lot of, how you say, like, they call them jump outs, where a lot of the Secret Service are, how you say, are they don't have name tags or any kind of insignia showing where they come from. So, like, they go up to this van, like, they'll drive up to the van, and all of a sudden they'll jump out and grab somebody and throw them in a van, and they drive out. So those, you know, a lot of people are calling those jump outs, you know. And so, yeah, they're unmarked police vehicles, and also I would just call them Secret Service because there's no name tags or nothing on them. So I'm just gonna say, you know,
unmarked police vans.
Yeah, but they've been arresting a lot of high profiles, like protester organizations. And Black Lives Matter organizations, you know, have been quickly grabbed and snapped and thrown into their car and taken away, you know. And there's one video showing of a lady being thrown in a van.
I don't have the statistics on the protest. I'm sure people who are ethical have been arrested and people who are subversive have been arrested on both sides. But I just know the Republicans make a big deal about that one redneck who was shot up in Portland and killed by the liberals.
Yeah, but they think by secretly arresting all these top organizers that they're going to stop the protests, but that still goes on. I mean, people still show up even if the main guy from Facebook is, you know, sending the message to everybody. There'll be somebody else to, you know what I mean, to follow through. Somebody else will take charge and start sending the messages out, and the people will show up no matter what. Or even though there's no message, everything's being blocked off, people will just randomly still show up anyways, and they'll gather somewhere. You know, even though they managed to push the crowd smaller, make the crowd smaller by arresting thousands and thousands of people that they, you know, and also giving hefty fines. You know, still more mass to show up.
So do you know anybody
who
is protested who are subjected to heavy fines?
Well, I mean, I see these YouTube videos, independent, you know. I like to watch really, like, straight-up raw independent videos, like, from
yeah, like things that aren't tampered with.
Yeah, like, you know, straight-up from people, you know. Like from people post making their own YouTube video and posting it out there and telling their side of the story, you know what I mean? Making their own, you know? That's who I believe. I believe that one person with that really small YouTube channel, you know, he's not very famous. Nobody knows him, you know? He makes this small YouTube video and he says his little story. And I believe that little small guy, rather than a big giant organization just trying to probably push some kind of political agenda or something, right? You know,
but I do think it's all about influence. Like, there's people like you out there who are searching for those independent videos, but how does that translate into the bigger picture? People who are trying to determine just what the consensus is on people who want change in America. Like, do they want, is it just both fringe sides on the extreme trying to get a condensed message to the middle, or is it average people who have something valid to say? And it starts with the way the law enforcement treats people, because the major eruption this year happened Memorial Day weekend in my own city of Minneapolis. Well, I actually live in Duluth now, which is 2.5 hours north, but I went to the George Floyd Memorial. I stood right in front of Cup Foods, and now it's a shrine. It's a shrine to black power and to justifications for a fair police force.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it kind of sucks. I mean, they're trying to out there and protest, and there's like little that's done. I mean, even after all those gallons of people protesting, you still have other, you know, small organizations trying to push them out the way, and then you have, you know, the government supposedly making laws to help, and they don't do anything. So the battle still continues, I guess. You know, it still continues. With, you know, they're still trying to push to make a change.
I have a couple questions for you after you finish your talk about protesters.
No, I'm done. I'm done. You can ask me a question now.
Okay. You've been only on the air once in the last 3 or 4 months. We have a lot of friction right within our co-hosts. We have John, who only advocates for Donald Trump and what his agenda is, and at the same time he's trying to incriminate the top brass during the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton, and he's only trying to vilify Democratic opponents to Trump, which he classifies as the swamp. But on the other hand, we have a president who is cheating on his taxes. He paid less in taxes than the average person who makes $40,000 a year. And he ripped off the government, which makes me believe that he's not loyal to the government at all. And then we have Don, who continually harps on reparations and what a fair and just society should be. And then we have Ben, who's a conservative, but his arguments make sense. And then we have Wade, who only talks about the rights of the individual and how big government is terrible. So within our own show, we have a lot of friction and disasters to the point where I don't think there's really any balance anymore.
Well, our show, you know, basically is unique. It's a unique show that offers a lot of different opinions from a lot of different sides of the spectrum. And, you know, it's not like...
The only time I enjoy it is when a guest caller comes on.
Yeah.
Like we had
a guy named
Naj from Atlanta. We had a black guy in 2016 who called in several times saying that he was a black man in Missouri voting for Trump who carried an open firearm. Recently we had another guy who was arguing, what he was trying to say is that each state should have a set number of representatives, but they shouldn't be geographically assigned. It should just be a lump number per population.
Well, here's the thing on Donald Trump. I mean, you even got black people voting for Donald Trump. And at this point, you know, and Donald Trump has done a lot of ridiculous, has said a lot of ridiculous things and done a lot of ridiculous things, right? I mean, he literally sexually harassed a bunch of women, you know, grabbed them by their vaginas and hugged and kissed women's really tight, forcing them, you know, not letting them go, and done a lot of other stuff, you know, that's very questionable, but... You know, even Donald Trump said it himself, that he can literally shoot somebody in the middle of the street and he will still win. They will still vote for him, you know, like literally.
That's pretty much true, I hate to say it.
Yeah, I hate to say it myself, too. I bet that would be true. I bet he can literally shoot somebody in the middle of Pickfinster Avenue, whatever, and people will still vote for him and he will still win. And that's how, like, crazy radical to. There are some of our people, some of the people in the society got to. They support our government no matter what. So like you got hardcore Republicans. Now I'm talking about hardcore Republicans. No matter who's the president, Donald Trump, or even a worse guy than Donald Trump, right? Let's just say some child rapist or whatever person or a worse guy than Donald Trump is the new president, and they'll still vote for him and they'll still support him no matter what. And
you know
Donald
what
Trump
I think
has,
the dilemma is about
proven,
Donald Trump? Is that he had the money. He had the money to break through the establishment, and he had some financial support, but he pulled off a win, but he was not part of the establishment. They should have shut him down before he even got into office because he's a holy terror. He's upsetting. He's disrespectful. he erodes the institutional purpose of government. He's a domestic terrorist, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, even back then with George Bush, like, you know, even with George Bush, people were saying, you know, these hardcore Republicans, they'll vote for no matter who, it is as long as they're, you know, supported by the Republican main agenda, right? But no matter who, you know. And after we got Donald Trump, that what it did is when we got Donald Trump, it spread out and made all those hardcore Republicans visible. Like, they're all now visible, and we know who they are.
You mean they're all aligned
now
with him in a strange sort of way?
We can see all those hardcore that were willing to vote no matter who it was, as long as it was the Republican, you know. And, you know, and I bet if there's a worse guy than Donald Trump, that'll even show the proof even more, you know. You know what I mean? Donald Trump was the proof that those guys exist and they're hardcore and they're out there.
I disagree with you. I think Donald Trump solidified his power by, I wouldn't say recruiting, I would say by attracting certain kinds of voters. But those fringe voters who are like rednecks and don't like minorities, they're still the fringe factor, but they're the most present in the media. But I think there's a large constituency out there, like moderate voters who don't like his tactics, that have only gone along with him because they dislike the left. And they think the left is extreme. And
well,
that
we had a lot of
they don't like globalists. But Donald Trump within himself is dangerous, and he does not belong in government. He's a reckless human being.
No, yes, but we have a lot of racist Republicans, right? They were secretly racist, and sure, they said, oh, you know, certain people
don't
belong.
But I don't think they wanted to make that type of negativity their mantra. It's just that now they're forced to go along with Donald Trump because they don't want to give up the reins of power.
All right. Well, you know, they say they don't like him, but they vote for him, and they know what he's going to do, and they still support him anyway. So that's kind of like I don't want these guys to kill these innocent people, but I'm still going to vote for him, and I'm still going to support him, and I'm still going to let them go out there and grab their guns and shoot all these innocent people, right? It's like, you know what I mean? It's kind of the same thing, right? Like, you're just letting him do all that.
Well, I think it kind of reminds me of that priest in Central America who got killed when he decided to stand up to the Catholic Church and all the corruption around him. And he ended up getting killed. His name escapes me right now. But basically, he was killed because of his belief system. And people like Mitt Romney stand up occasionally to Donald Trump. And recently, two female Republican senators said they probably won't vote for Amy Coney Barrett because they don't want to make a rash decision about the Supreme Court right before the election. So I just think that there are normal people out there, but their voice is not heard that prevalent.
All right. Well, I can't wait till we get an extremist in the Democrat side too, just to show all the extremist Democrats that we have. Yeah.
Well, John thinks that people like Joe Biden, his son Hunter, and Nancy Pelosi are the extremes. That they're just trying to line their pockets with Chinese funding and the Ukrainian Burisma scandal.
Well, they're
you don't think Pelosi is? Pardon?
No, not really. I mean, she's not as bad as Joe Biden. I mean, Joe Biden's probably the worst one you just mentioned right there.
I think that in order to have an effective government, we have to work with the Chinese. We have to attempt to open relations with Russia and have diplomacy with Eastern Bloc Russia and with Southern Russia and the Middle East. And Donald Trump is doing fine, but I think it's more of a kind of like a papier-mâché type relations in the Middle East, because Honestly, I don't think that many people like Donald Trump.
No,
I think
not.
Israel likes him because they know that he's going to support them. But I don't think that the average person, like the African I heard talking in the UN today about COVID solutions, could really like any type of leadership that's such a loose cannon.
Yeah, I know.
I want to just know what your raw perspective is about Donald Trump's leadership. And do you think he's accomplishing anything?
It doesn't really matter. I mean, what he does, it's like saying back in the day, like when Barack Obama, Barack Obama made accomplishments. He was given an award and one of the peace conference. I had like a peace
the
conference.
The Nobel Peace Prize
and,
before he.
Yeah,
he was barely elected when he got the prize.
Yeah, he got the Nobel Peace Prize, even though under Barack Obama there was more airstrikes than any other president before him, right? There was a lot more airstrikes.
You're talking
in the
about
Middle East.
Places like Yemen and Qatar, and places where there were individual drones.
Yeah, it's cause, I mean, it was of course, it was a drone program because, I mean, before Barack Obama, I mean, when it was Bill Clinton, and then after Bill Clinton, it was George Bush, right? I forget the name, but anyways.
George Bush. Clinton was in there 8 years. First, it was Daddy Bush. And Clinton beat him out for a second term. He was there 8 years. Then there was George Bush Jr. for 8 years. Then there was Barack Obama for 8 years. And now we have Trump
for four years so far.
I
remember George Bush was there. We just barely started a drone program, but it wasn't that popular. So when Barack Obama came in, the drone program got really taken off, and it really started going crazy with the drone program and dropping a lot of bombs in the Middle East, a lot of bombs. So under Barack Obama, there was a lot more bombs being dropped
for a few wedding parties in Afghanistan. I know that much.
Yeah, they killed a lot of literally half of the people they killed were civilians, and half of them were enemy combatants. And, you know, and a lot of the times they were just making stuff up and lying. They didn't even know what to say anymore because they didn't have any proof of who they were killing. The bombs were just dropping, and they didn't even know who was dying. So, you know, it almost looks like they were just dropping indiscriminately, like one or whatever. And even if you look at Libya, where they dropped a lot of bombs over there in Libya, they kill a lot of black people over there in Libya. They have a good amount of black people over there, and they kill a bunch of them. And this is Barack Obama, right? Like, he's just killing his own black people. He doesn't care. And he gets a peace medal. He gets a peace medal for making peace, you know? And here's the thing. Even under Barack Obama, the deportations were the highest they ever been. Just under a black president, we have more deportations than any other president before him, you know? And so, I mean, this is the guy getting a Nobel Peace Prize, right? I mean, it's just a bunch of, you know,
yeah,
BS.
One of my friends from Milwaukee. His name's Bob Graff, and he was a Jesuit. And for many years, he refused to vote because of the inequities in the system. And he publicized a lot of the drones, you know, the drone problem. And he thinks that government as a whole is corrupt and evil. Like, it wasn't about supporting individual candidates. He just thought that the U.S. military complex was so embellished and evil that
there's no redemption. It's always been 8 years of a Democrat, 8 years of Republican. So it's been 8 years with Bush, and then 8 years with Donald Trump. I mean 8 years with Obama. So let me see. Hold on. Even before him, it was eight years with Clinton. So Clinton was 8 years with Clinton and 8 years with Bush. So it seems like every 8 years we trade from a Democrat to a Republican and then from Democrat to Republican. We just go back and forth every 8 years. And so it's been a two-party system, right? And it's not what they said, but it's what they do. And everything they've done, especially when it comes to the foreign policies, not the domestic policies, but the foreign policies, it's always been exactly the same, almost exactly the same. Every president we had the same foreign policy, the same, to spread out, to make, put more military forces out there. It just keeps on growing and growing. It's almost like a conquest, right? It doesn't matter who the president is, But even with new presidents, we had minor changes for our domestic policy, but that's about it.
I just think I'm not blind, and I've been alive for I turned 60 in September. So basically, I've seen the military industry complex grow and grow. I don't like the way that we just completely took out Iraq. I know Saddam Hussein wasn't the best person, but George Bush Sr. in the Gulf War, we were only in there 2 months to protect Kuwait, and Saddam killed 600,000 of his own people in the 2 or 3 years following that. And if we were going to take out Saddam, it should have been then. But I'm really not into any, even if we are a superpower, I philosophically don't believe in taking out other leaders unless it's dire. And somebody like Muammar Gaddafi, who was in charge of Libya for years on end, people say he did a lot of terrible things, but he also provided housing. They had a stable economy and a lot of jobs. And with all the upheaval in Egypt during the in 2011, when like 8 countries fell at one time, it was called the Arab Spring. There was a lot of eruption in the world, and there's only a few countries that came out of that without terrorist factions plaguing their country every single day of their lives. So remember that movie that we did? Remember that movie that you and I watched about Syria and some other places? It was called We Are the Giant, about the 2 or 3 protesters in all those countries? The world is not any better from power brokering or from overthrowing a government. It's worse off than it was under the dictatorships in many ways.
Well, the thing, the U.S. government, right, and not the people, because the people don't want war. Most people don't want war, but the U.S. government, they're good at destabilizing countries and taking dictators out of power, right? But they're not as good at restoring it and making it better. And it shows what they do, not what they say, because you have a lot of politicians that say, Saddam's an evil guy. We want to make things better and help the people out. We don't want to put democracy and help all these people out, right? They tell you all that bullshit, right? You hear all these politicians tell you about all that bullshit. And then when it does happen, we do take over. And what happens? No, we don't. It turns out we didn't really give a shit about those people. We just fucking destabilized them.
We had an ultimate geopolitical motive to overpower that nation, but we didn't have a moral and civil reason to overtake those people. Now, from my understanding, I know somebody who's being deployed to Iraq in 6 months, so we still have a presence there, a peacekeeping mission, but I don't really know how much we're rebuilding Iraqi society at this point. And I haven't followed it. Have you?
Not lately, no, but I can guarantee for sure it's still not great. It's still kind of, I can tell you, it's still a bad place to be in, that's for sure.
Right, and I do, it does disturb me, like even Afghanistan, as hard as the American leadership tried, and our collaboration with the military, with their mainstream military, not their flanked forces that were against the government. Like, we made very few accomplishments there. A lot of the Afghani leaders were still killed, the top military advisors, the top government leaders were killed and threatened. And we had, with all our hardware and all our guns, we didn't have hardly any influence at all in the end.
Yeah, the goal was never to help the people there. The goal was never to help them out and free them and, you know, and give them homes and take care of them. And the goal was never to help the people. You can see that. Obviously, you can see that.
I don't think the mainstream American who has their kid in the army can see it.
The goal was just establish power, establish resources, and establish. And when I say establish power, is when they take over, they get somebody in to be, you know, the president there, but somebody who's gonna, you know, do what they say, you know. So, you know, usually, I mean, after Saddam, after they took out Saddam, the new president that they put in, like, literally George Bush trained him himself, no joke. George Bush literally trained him himself, and the CIA picked him too. He was picked under the CIA. George Bush trained him. And he was like, so, I mean, literally, I mean, it's not, so the people didn't pick their own president. It was the CIA who picked the president. So it was, it's,
well, this is how I,
you know,
feel, because I did a paper on Iraq. I was in grad school from 2003 to 2008. We went there in 2003. The conditions for democracy were never present in Iraq, and we could not establish an American man-made democratic government in there because they don't have the civil leadership. They don't have the family structure and the business structure for a civil-private society. They all were adhering to Saddam Hussein for 25 or 30 years, so it was never going to be successful. Then after they blamed Obama after he withdrew troops in 2011 or 12, and they said that there was a vacated area, and that's how ISIS got more leverage. And there was a valley somewhere between Syria and Iraq where the ISIS was promoting itself, and eventually they got beaten down. But it's really the Middle East is not our – it is not our baby to control. They have to regulate themselves, and foreign involvement only makes it worse.
Well, they can't regulate themselves when they destroy all their army, right? I mean, when you destroy all their army and they have no way to defend themselves, they have no way to regulate themselves because anybody else can come in and take over, and that would be it. So, you know, once you take over a country like that, You need to continue to have your military presence there, and make sure the people are actually have their freedom to choose.
In Iraq we should still engage, since we created a mess. We should still engage in rebuilding it, but we have to do it in a pragmatic manner, which gives the Iraqi government the authority to oversee us, not the reverse, because it costs a lot of money to overthrow a country.
Yeah.
And now
and
that
we
have to be equitable about it.
Yeah, we have to help them. I mean, the U.S. can't be doing like right now they're doing in Venezuela, where they do a sanction. They sanction Venezuela, so now Venezuela cannot get food, can no more longer get food, or even spend the U.S. currency to buy food anywhere, anyways. So when they
did
attention,
we did a show about that about a year ago when everything started falling apart there. I don't like how we punish the regular members of society just because the government turns more socialistic. Like,
and, yeah,
a lot
and
of Venezuelans are trying to flee their country.
And here's the funny part about it is after the U.S. sanctioned Venezuela and froze their money and didn't allow them to buy food anymore, they started bringing over food for the people, right? Like they brought over food, even with the sanctions. So that's kind of funny. Like they sent you to the country so they can't buy food, but they bring food to the people and let the people know that the U.S. is on their side, right? They're like, it's on their side.
Yeah, I watched the documentary on that, on how people were fleeing the city and they had this Rocky Mountain passage they had to go through, and then they ended up in one of the minor cities, and it was a hot mess.
Yeah.
They couldn't even get toothpaste. So
exactly.
With
like,
that, we've been on the air 1 hour and 10 minutes, and we have 5 minutes to go before I have to rewrite the show and discuss other things we talked about. So I'm going to have you do your conclusion now.
Yeah. Well, basically, the goal to win over people's heart, right, is to first, make it seem like, that their leader is terrible and, taking away all their food and all their stuff. So, and then give them to them. Like say you have people working for you. So what I do is freeze your money so you can't pay your employees and your employees are starving. And then, and take away whatever supplies you have so you can't give them to your workers. And then I'll come in as the savior and help all your workers out. And now your workers view me as the good guy and you're the bad guy somehow, that is to take and give and take, I guess,
you're talking about the regular labor market now.
No, yeah, but in a different sense. I'm just pulling up like in a different sense of meaning, but I mean, it's the give and take, right? You take somewhere else and then you give directly from, directly, and you make yourself look good, and it's a tactic, the U.S. have been using because they have the type of power. They have the ability to sanction countries because the U.S. produces a lot of goods.
This is how I perceive the next 4 years. I think that we have, as a nation, we have to be honest with ourselves. We have to cut through all the political vitriol and establish national and bilateral goals and international relations. And the only way we can do that is with decent leadership. And I overheard today on the, I think it was the BBC or something, that we have terrible leadership right now in the world. And we need rational-minded people to be running the world. If we are going to look to the government leadership, we need decent international and national heroes. Biden's a pretty weak. Biden's pretty weak. I think Kamala Harris is good. I don't think she's a bad person. I don't
it
even think
matter.
Pence is that bad, even though he's misguided. But I think America has poor leadership. We're not respected. And I don't care if we're number one. I just want us to be decent.
Well, I've seen the history of every president that we had. I've seen the history of every president that we had. And I can tell you for sure that no matter who the president is, it's still going to be the same because the people who run this country are not the presidents. They're just puppets. The people are literally the elite, the corporate elite. The ones that are running this country, the very powerful, the ones that have behind the doors, the ones that pull the strings, of course. You call me a conspiracy theorist, but if you look at all the facts and you look at every president and everything he's done, you can literally see, like, it's almost like a domino effect, right? You can see like a domino effect that just keeps on happening again and again and again. And the next president is not going to be any better. No matter how
because
much people want to believe,
because you think the structure is inherently corrupt and that there's a mastermind running the agenda, pretty much, right?
Well, that would explain a lot of things. If that was that was true, which I think that is true. If it was true, it would definitely explain a lot of things that are not right in this country.
Well, I do think that even if Donald Trump comes across as a dumbass, he claimed like $1 million in 2 Mideast countries for consulting fees. So he's got his hands in a lot of pies, too, and he's profiteering. And the billionaires of the world probably do have more influence than governments. But with that, I'm going to end the show now because it's going to be almost 1 in the morning in Minnesota. And I'm going to cut it off with a song from John. I really appreciate talking to you tonight, and I think our show became more successful as I got more refocused after hearing from a few co-hosts. And thank you for being part of this show.
For sure. Happy to be here.
Thank you, Albert, and we'll talk next week. Our regular show is Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock. Good night, and have a great night. Good night.
All right, good night.